We're continuing in the 21st chapter of 2 Samuel. We're ready to begin at the 11th verse. At this point in our study, we find that seven men of the household of Saul have just been put to death by the Gibeonites. They've been hanged by them. Whether hanged on a cross or just how this hanging was accomplished is not clear here, but they were hanged because of the sins of Saul and the sins of the bloody house of Saul. It seems that at one time Saul had tried to eradicate the Gibeonites from the land of Israel. This was against the will of God. It went against the covenant that Israel had made with these Gibeonites way back when they first came into the land. And so they violated an oath that their forefathers had made. And it seemed that Saul and his house had gone unpunished for this deed up to this point. But now God brought a famine upon the land, a famine that lasted for 3 years. David inquired of God, why are we having the famine? And God told him it was because of the sin of Saul and the bloody house of Saul in the killing of these Gibeonites. And so David went to the Gibeonites and asked them what needed to be done to appease them. And they told David that he should select seven men from the house of Saul and they would hang them. And that's what happened. And so now in the 10th verse, we have the story of Rizpah, who was one of the concubines of Saul, who was the mother of two of these men. How she went out to the place where they were hanging, and she stayed there and kept the birds off them during the day and the beasts off at night as they hung. And we also learn that they hung until water fell. We don't know just how long this was. They were to hang, though, until the drought was broken, till God sent rain. Some think that this was from March until October, and the rains usually came in that time of the year, about October. But others think it might not have been but just a few days till God sent rain to break this drought. But nevertheless, they did hang there till the drought was broken. This mother guarded those bodies while they were hanging. And we also would like to point out that this went against, apparently, the law in Deuteronomy 21:23 that states that when one was hanged on a tree, that his body was not to be left that night, but it was to be buried the same day that it hanged. Because he was a curse, or it was a curse for him to hang like this. But we find in this case that this is really not necessarily a violation of that law, because these men were intended to be a curse. They were an anathema. They were to be treated in a very unglorious, uncomplimentary way because of the deeds of Saul, and quite possibly because of their own individual deeds too. So this is the situation now as we go into the 11th verse. And it was told David what Rizpah, the daughter of Ai, the concubine of Saul, had done. So David learns that this woman was so faithful to her sons that she went out to this place of their execution, and she guarded their bodies by day and by night until they were taken down, that is, until water fell from heaven, till water dropped upon them out of heaven, that is, the drought was broken. And this seemed to have had quite an effect upon David, because David had had his own children to die. He could very well sympathize with this woman, Rizpah, regardless of why the sons died. David's sons died because of his sins too. And so we can see that he was very sympathetic. And as a result of this, then, David was determined to give them a good burial. Now, this execution of these men wasn't any personal vendetta on the part of David anyway. David was simply carrying out the will of God in this matter to bring about this punishment. So verse 12 says, "And David went and took the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan his son from the men of Jabesh-Gilead, which had stolen them from the street of Bethshan, where the Philistines had hanged them, when the Philistines had slain Saul in Gilboa." Now this refers back to the time when Saul was killed, and the Philistines did take Saul and his sons, including Jonathan. They hung those bodies up on the wall of this town of Bethshan, but the people from Jabesh-Gilead took the bodies down. They stole the bodies from where the Philistines had hanged them, and then they took care of the bodies. They buried them under a tree, according to 1 Samuel 31, 12, and 13. So David takes those bodies, the bodies of Saul and his sons, and verse 13, And he brought up from thence the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan his son, and they gathered the bones of them that were hanged. So they put all these together. They're all members of the household of Saul now. Those that were hanged have been sufficiently punished. There's no need to treat them in a bad way anymore. That is, to treat their bodies in a bad way. They're men now who have undergone the punishment of God. And so all these remains of Saul and his sons and these seven men that are hanged that are sons and offspring of Saul are taken by David. Verse 14, and the bones of Saul and Jonathan his sons buried they in the country of Benjamin in Zelah in the sepulchre of Kish his father. So they brought them back to the family burying place, and they performed all that the king commanded. So they treated these bodies with the proper dignity. We see here that David didn't have any personal animosity towards Saul or his house. He was simply carrying out the will of God in this that had been done. And David probably also has in mind his feeling at the very shameful death and burial of his son Absalom when he was thrown into a pit and had rocks thrown on top of him. And after that, God was entreated for the land. So now God has been also satisfied. He has had sin punished in the way that he wanted it to be punished. And he no longer holds this against the land or against the nation. He has lifted the drought, and the water then has dropped from heaven. We must never forget the lesson that unforgiven sin will never go unpunished. Sooner or later, there's going to be a punishment by God. And the punishment given in this life is very light compared to the punishment that's going to be given after this life. And let's also remember another thing about sin, and that is sin, regardless of whether it is forgiven or not, sin always has some consequences. There will be consequences of sin. So it's not something we can do and just suddenly repent and get God's forgiveness and then it acts as though it was never done. There are going to be consequences of sin. And the suffering of this land, the suffering of this family of Saul, all these things we've just been reading about that are a part of human misery, were all brought on by some kind of sin. And consequently, we need to learn that lesson about sin. We cannot sin without being stained or scarred by it some way or another. Now, beginning in verse 15, we have the story of some more conflicts with the Philistines. This seems to have happened in the latter part of David's reign, as David was growing much older. And though David had subdued these Philistines in the past, and they could not field a very large army, they still are going to be problems. They still are going to attack. They're going to try to do all that they can to destroy God's people as long as there is any ability in them to do this. And this, of course, is true with the church today and its enemies. If the enemies happen to be small, if the enemies happen to have been defeated before, they still will have the capacity to come back and to deal misery to the church. So beginning with the 15th verse, moreover, the Philistines had yet war again with Israel. And David went down, and his servants with him, and fought against the Philistines. And David waxed faint. Now David was getting old, or at least much older than he had been in the past, and he was not able to physically have the stamina that he used to have. We remember that very recently he was persuaded not to go into the battle against Absalom his son, but with the Philistines he probably thought this was a different matter, that he felt an obligation to lead an army and to assist them in these battles with the Philistines. But during this particular conflict, David waxed faint. That is, he grew weak. He probably overtaxed himself. He could have even had a heat stroke. We don't know what happened here, but in the course of trying to carry out the physical activity, he was not able to follow through with it. And so we can see how that this would then make David very vulnerable to his enemies during a time of battle. Someone seeing the king grow weak like this, why, then he would be very easily killed. Verse 16, and Ishbi-benob, which was of the sons of the giant, the weight of whose spear weighed 300 shekels of brass in weight, he being girded with a new sword, thought to have slain David. So here's one of the men who is a son of the giant, no doubt a son of the a giant that David had slain, a son of Goliath. And these giants were probably all in the same family. But this man, who had a heavy spear, and he was girded with a new sword, and this word new sword can be translated new armor, actually. He was well prepared for battle. He thought this would be an opportunity to kill David. He thought to have slain David. Although, here's a man who didn't have God in his thoughts. He didn't know what the will of God was. And it certainly wasn't the will of God for him to have killed David at this time. So he was not going to be successful. So verse 17 says, "But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah," which would be, of course, be the nephew of David, "succored him and smote the Philistine and killed him." So Abishai comes to the rescue of David. He succored him. That is, he gave him support, or else he fought in his stead, and he smote the Philistine and killed him. Now, some think that this actually means that David killed the Philistine, because in verse 22, David is named among those that helped to kill these giants. But the way it's worded here in verse 17, actually Abishai is the one who killed the giant. "Then the men of David sware unto him, saying, Thou shalt go no more out with us to battle, that thou quench not the light of Israel." It's too big of a risk for you to go any more into battle. We need you too much to be our king. You're our leader. You're the light of Israel. And we're running a big risk every time you go out to battle of having this light of Israel quenched, of having our king to be killed and taken away from us. So you'll not do this anymore. You're not going to battle with us anymore. "And it came to pass after this that there was again a battle with the Philistines at Gob." Now this is another conflict with the Philistines. "Then Shebekai the Hushathite slew Saph, which was of the sons of the giant." So they had another conflict with a giant involved, another one of these sons, and this man named Shebekai killed this giant whose name was Saph. And verse 19, "There was again a battle in Gob with the Philistines." Here's a third conflict now that's mentioned, where Elhanan, the son of Jerahmeelim, a Bethlehemite, slew the brother of Goliath, the Gittite, the staff of whose spear was like a weaver's beam. So here's a brother of Goliath now that is involved, another giant. And this man, Elhanan, slew him. Verse 20, "And there was yet a battle in Gath," another battle now, "where there was a man of great stature that had on his hand 6 fingers and on every foot 6 toes, 24 in number. He also was born to the giant." So another giant that they're involved with now. "And when he defied Israel, Jonathan, the son of Shimeah, the brother of David, slew him." So this is another nephew of David, a son of David's brother. And he slew this giant that was not only of great stature, but he had more fingers and toes than was normal. But he was slain then by David's nephew. And verse 22 sums it up. "These 4 were born to the giant in Gath, and fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants." So these giants gave them trouble as Philistines. And they had to be killed one by one. Each one had to be dealt with. Each one came for his time against Israel. And there had to be someone who was able and willing and valiant and courageous enough to rise to the occasion to confront the giant and to slay him. And so it is with the Christian today, with the child of God. In every age, there will always be a giant, and another giant to take his place. There will always be a time in which we must be able to defend ourselves spiritually, when we must be able to give answer to any man that should question us as to what our hope is and why our hope is. And we must take the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. We must be able to use it in a skillful and adequate way so as to defend ourselves against the fiery darts of the devil. And this concludes the 21st chapter of 2 Samuel.